Hello, and welcome to Practice Made Perfect Storyteller Series. This series was a shared vision based on many member discussions and the desire to share stories about our lives, our passions, and what makes us a community. We know that the American College of Cardiology is the professional home for our cardiovascular care team, and we want to build on that. There are many changes happening in medicine as a whole that affect our members and are contributing to a loss of our collective community. We hope Practice Made Perfect Storytellers will be an opportunity to re-engage and reinvigorate our team around our shared interests in cardiology and life.
Welcome. This is Allison Bailey, and I'm so glad you've joined us today as I talk with Dr. Haval Kelly about his amazing path to medicine and how he's using what he's learned to improve lives around him. Haval, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me here. My pleasure to be here.
For those of you who don't yet know Haval, you're in for a treat. He just finished his cardiology and preventive cardiology fellowships at Emory University School of Medicine and is starting this week as a general cardiologist at Northside Hospital Cardiovascular Institute in Atlanta, Georgia. I've known Haval for several years, and he's an absolutely amazing cardiologist. I'm so proud of everything he's done, both inside and outside of cardiology. Today, we're going to focus on his journey and what he's learned along the way. Haval, can you tell us about your life and how you got to this point?
Well, you know, I'm honored to be here. This is really meaningful for me to be on the ACC podcast and, you know, never imagined I would ever be here. I left, Syria in the 1990s because of political oppression against my dad. And we moved to Germany as Kurdish refugees. I lived there in Germany, refugee camps for almost 6 years. And we were not accepted to stay there. So we had to apply as asylum status to come to the U.S. And then we came here actually 2 weeks after 9/11 to the south in Clarkston, Georgia, a small town outside of Atlanta. That was kind of an interesting time because I was 18 years old, high school senior. You know, my parents couldn't work, so I had to start picking up a job to wash dishes after school to support my family. And then eventually went to Georgia State, Morehouse School of Medicine, and Emory residency in 2012, where literally it was like one block away from the restaurant where I washed dishes. And then I was very blessed to do my fellowship there and train in prevention under Dr. Lawrence Sperling and Dr. Hayumi. And thankfully now I'm finished in July and have a job. So I feel very happy and amazed about it.
That is such a great story and really embodies what I think of when I think what's possible in this world. You know, imagine a young man like yourself come into this country at such a trying time, right after 9/11 that you said, and now look at you, you've done such great things. So one of the things I'd like to ask you is, how was it going through higher education as someone with a different background, you know, not maybe like the rest of your classmates? Did you learn things that our listeners may find valuable?
You know, one other thing is, like I always tell you, like a lot of the refugee coming to the U.S., you know, they dealing with the language barrier initially, but once you master the English language, you're actually dealing with the same issue any poor American deals with. So one of the issues I noticed early on that I was coming from an underserved communities and some of the resources were not available to us because we just didn't live around professional people. But one thing that I learned in my journey, there are many people like me and fellow American who lived on those communities, that we have something like resilience. If we can make it through poverty and challenges and struggle, we can make it anywhere. So that actually thing helped me a lot through my education to push through. Because I never forget that when I started as an intern at Emory, all my classmates came from these like top-notch school. And I felt like I was like, I don't know much, but I used to come early to work, read early, and then stay late. And eventually I was able to catch up with everyone and do well. So I think resilience is a character that many of us learn through challenges and survival.
I think that is wonderful. And, from someone who came from an area, Appalachia, again, a very poverty stricken, I felt the same way many times. And I think I've seen the same thing. People who work hard are able to get ahead. It doesn't really matter what your background is, as long as there's that focus on education and getting forward. And clearly, I'm sure your parents had a role in this for always supporting you and instilling the value of an education.
Sure. Yeah. And especially my mother, my dad was a lawyer in Syria. My mom never got really a formal education, but she was the backbone of the family because, a lot of refugee parents, actually primarily the male, when they moved so much from different country, they go into depression or PTSD, and because they lose like that role of providing for their family. And that's what happened to us. So my mom was the big backbone of our family.
Wow, you're very lucky. And I'm so glad we inherited you into the cardiology community. I think, and I hope the world's changing and we're working on improving our pipeline of people that are coming into medicine and other fields that have historically been underrepresented by people like you and like me. I know you've been involved in some really interesting projects to help with this process. Can you tell us about some of those? I know this is really exciting for you too.
Oh yeah, thank you for the opportunity. You know, the reason why I started doing what I'm doing, working in underserved community, especially the students, when I went back to my high school as a first year fellow in cardiology, I spoke about being a doctor for 10 minutes. And after I spoke, I left my email. And then when I left my high school, I noticed that nothing really much changed, still the same low graduation rate. But what really happened that night, I got so many emails from these students who heard me speak and telling me, hey, I lost my hope of becoming a doctor or a healthcare professional because I take care of my parents, but I work multiple jobs. But your story gave me hope. I'm like, well, they really need to see more of us in their communities. You know, we could bring them to the university, we could bring them to the hospital to shadow us, but unless we are present in the community, we could inspire them. So I started a program called the Young Physician Initiative. It's a concept of initiating inspiration in these students and providing connection to our medical network. So me and first year medical student start going to the one high school of mine, kind of do these sessions where we can inspire kids to become doctor. We create a whole curriculum based on a med student schedule and on the physician. And that was back in late 2016. And we are very lucky today that we have expanded to almost like 4 high schools, 7 colleges, and then 4 middle school program this year with a virtual component due to COVID.
Wow, that is super interesting, and what a great response. So do you open these programs up to anyone that's interested at the school?
Yeah, so we partner with schools. We realize the easiest way to actually reach out to the student is working with the schools in these underserved community, because they provide us a platform to connect to interested students. So if a school is interested, we work with them. But also in addition to that, we created a program, you know, through virtual mentorship and also through our annual conference for any students who are interested in becoming a doctor, they join us. So we created several models. Again, all of this came from us being in the community and realizing what the needs are.
That's great. And are you doing this only in your local region down near Atlanta, or have you branched out anywhere else?
So interesting, like, you know, we mostly were in Atlanta, and now we're doing something with Mercer Medical School in the rural area. Some of the medical students are working in some of the schools there. Through our virtual mentorship program, actually, we're working with Hispanic students in the University of Alabama and also University of Florida. So we're actually testing this model. COVID has been a great opportunity for us to actually implement some of the virtual concept, so that mentorship doesn't require necessarily a physical presence. It could be also expanded to people through a virtual model. So we've been, you know, working on several things that we're trying to test. And, you know, as you know, it's very hard for COVID right now. People can't shadow, can't meet, can't go to the hospital to get experience. So we need to figure out a way to get these students, because we might lose a lot of students during these times to apply to medical school or go into medicine.
That's right. And so if I'm in a community and I have an interest in doing something like this, do you have a network of people that I could reach out to, or that someone else that wanted to do something similar could reach out to?
Yes, of course. And then we know we have our website, like, you know, ypiprogram.com. It actually has all application, all the way from a school requesting us to a medical profession, to a medical student, how they could start. And when they reach out to us and fill the application, we actually guide them, because everything we do is on the cloud and all the models is all written, even to the simple thing of emails to reach out to schools. We have all these templates. So the way we build the program is, how do we make it so easy and low effort for a medical profession to be involved, to engage in the community with a high impact, you know, and making a difference in diversity?
Yeah. So, and these are high school students that we're talking about primarily?
Well, high school and college. We started with high school early in our program. Now we expanded to college. And then, you know, you heard about the deep pipeline that exam studies showed, you know, people by fourth grade already deciding, like, you know, what they want to do. So we actually have a middle school program too now that we're implementing and we're piloting. So we're trying to have like a whole deep pipeline all the way from the bottom to the top.
Wow, this is super exciting. So have you seen any success stories yet?
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, like, it takes time, but, you know, for example, one of our program, you know, member got into Emory Medical student. He was a Georgia State YPI program, you know, and then now he's coming back to lead the same program at his college. So, you know, this is a story of many we got. So, I mean, and all of it ranging from people emailing us about what they're doing. But the biggest impact is, you know, the survey we collect, you know, pre and post, you could see definitely like people after joining the program, they have more confidence in themselves to actually pursue a career in medicine and have more guidance.
Yeah. And they realize it's possible because they see people that look like themselves doing exactly these amazing things like you're doing.
You're right. And, you know, and beyond that also, like, you know, yes, there's a shortage of a lot of people from different groups, you know, especially right now with the lack of Black men in medicine. But we also noticed that if you're actually physically present in these communities and they see you coming back, once they see you care, they're really attracted to your passion and compassion. I think that's really the most important thing. I always tell, yes, we don't want everyone to be underprivileged, but we also could guide a lot of people privileged how to make a difference. I mean, I have students who come from like North Dakota and, you know, and Midwest who never like probably met students who don't look like them, but they're part of the program, want to serve because they realize there's a need to be part of it. And we show them how to make a difference.
Well, that's wonderful. And even if they don't, you know, get to that ultimate goal of medicine, which may have been what draw them in, I'm sure they're going to be more successful in whatever facet of life they choose to do because of the strong mentorship programs you're developing.
Exactly. You know, I think what we're trying to do is also, you know, I volunteer in a free clinic in the same community I grew up. You know, I could treat hypertension, diabetes all day long, but at one point I have to create students from those communities to become physician, nurses, nurse practitioner, tech, to come back and serve. That's something should be part of how we can make a difference in this community. That's really one of the passion for me because, you know, I grew up in a community, there was only two reasons the ambulance came to my neighborhood. Either someone had a heart attack or someone got shot. And, you know, I became a cardiologist because I wanted to fix that. And interestingly, my brother became a trauma surgeon. So those images, you know, stuck with us all of our life. You know, we wanted to make a difference. And that's why we pursue the career in medicine.
Now, the other thing that I know that you've been involved in is helping bring education outside of just mentorship to some of these communities. I know you've done some education during the time of COVID. You want to tell us a little bit about that? Because I think that's also really awesome.
What I like about our communities in Atlanta, when you're walking around and helping, you become kind of the, you know, the small town doctor concept. They recognize you. So during COVID, people will call me and call my friends, be like, hey, like, I don't know what's going on. And I realized that poor American had no access to testing or any form of education with COVID. And a lot of the immigrants and refugees had nothing in their language translated. So we started actually using social media by translating some of the material and simplified it in English format and pass it through, like, you know, WhatsApp group, Viper groups, kind of get to people, start hosting some kind of like Q&A session online in different languages, also in English, bring people who had COVID. So that was one of the initial steps. And then we got involved with testing. I think early in March, we did like a drive-through testing through like the churches and some of the clinics. And we tested like 200 people in 4 hours. We were able to see where the hot spots were, and we focused on those hot spots to give them like more education, hand sanitizer, and mask. So I think, you know, one thing that we forget as a physician, you know, we could take our role beyond the exam room and the Excel sheet. I think we don't recognize how powerful our figure is when we actually are present in the community and we can make a big difference. And COVID really shows that, like, you know, that people are asking for our presence in their communities.
No, I think that's absolutely true. And, you know, I think it's even more apparent during this time that there's a lot of misinformation as far as public health out there. And I think our undereducated and poor communities face the burden of that. And I know you've done a lot in online platforms and social media to try to address some of that incorrect data that may be out there. And I think that's great. I can't imagine how many people you've reached with just those messages.
Yeah, you know, and I'm part of a team. So what the blessing is, you know, when I work on something, I try to bring everyone part of it and replicate the model. So we were able to take our model to give it to other communities to do the same thing in other, you know, languages or in English language. You know, and I'm very lucky working with the Georgia State School of Public Health that has a campus also in, you know, in a city where we live. We were able to do some work with them. So what we did as, you know, as physician, really, we brought the academic institution, the community organizer and leaders together to address this issue of COVID. And it was very successful. And the community responded to us because they felt like they were part of a task force that really is going to make a difference.
Well, Vival, I don't really know how you find the time to do it all, but I'm so glad you do. Are there any last words you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
You know, we're all very busy, as you mentioned, but we made it this far because someone invested the time and efforts in ourselves, you know, in us to make it this far. I think we should always think like, even if you dedicate 1 hour a month to make a difference in someone's life, for me, that was this heart surgeon, Dr. Latu, who reached out to me and talked to me on the phone, and that really made a difference for my life. You know, there's a saying in a lot of religious books says, if you save one life, it's like saving humanity. I believe if you inspire one mind, you can inspire humanity. You never know who that person you talk to, what a help will be one day. Maybe the president, or maybe someone who's over, you can make a bigger difference.
Wow, what great insight. I'm sure you've all enjoyed this discussion with Dr. Vival Kelly and find him as inspirational as I do. You know, I think he really proves that we can all make the world a better place. We just have to start somewhere and do something that inspires us. Here's hoping you find that thing too. Thank you, Vival, so much for being with us tonight.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me here.
Thank you again for listening to Practice Made Perfect Storytellers today. We'd love to keep the conversation going and help build our community. Be on the lookout for opportunities to interact with our storytellers. Additionally, if you know someone who would make a great storyteller, please let us know.